Why is Trump really making the markets go down? Why is he crashing the markets? Today on episode one of Hey Todd, the show for those of us who need to know, we'll be discussing what the real motivation is for Trump to crash the markets. We know the markets have been up, and we know 0% interest rates don't last forever, and we know the bonds that were bought for quantitative easing to prop the markets up are rolling off. And we know the Fed is pulling out money. None of this is a surprise. We also know that you have Donald Trump bashing Powell every day, blaming him for the sell-off. What he's doing is not a surprise. It's not unexpected. It wasn't planned. It's not unplanned for. Today you had Mnuchin talk with the plunge protection team and CEOs of banks to reassure the markets that there was enough liquidity. The Fed comes back and says, everything's fine. We're seeing nothing. So what's really going on? You have three things that are in play. You know, first, you've got the computerized markets. In the, 15 years ago, we had humans controlling order flow. You had finger flippers and pits, those, the guys who were pit traders and the funny suits, flashing fingers at each other. Human market makers making markets. We've computerized the markets. Those people have gotten pushed out, and now machines do most of the transaction volumes. With that, you had rules accommodating for, the computer systems to do the trading. And, some of those rules opened up activities that, are definitely different than what humans do. Humans like to see things go up. We're creationists. We want to see money. We want to see businesses get created. We want to see stocks go up. We want to see people fund, people be happy. And with the computers, they've got one purpose, and that's to extract cash. They're there to make transactions, and they're there to make profitable transactions. They don't care if it goes up or down. They just want to make the transactions. But with this, you had regulators who get paid by transactions. FINRA, 1 cent per 10,000 shares, that goes through the tape. They get one penny every time 10,000 shares trades. Well, if I go in and I buy 10,000 shares, then they get their one penny off of me. If I go in and I sell short, meaning I want the price to go down, so I sell it, and then I borrow it and then sell it, and then wait for the price to go down and buy it back, FINRA gets two shares. So they make more money off of opening up order flow for short selling. And they did this to accommodate the computers. And computers can not only buy a lot of shares really quick and then sell them higher, they can also sell a lot of shares really quick and buy them back lower. So FINRA actually does better with short sellers. They opened up a few rules. They unwound the uptick rule, which meant before short sellers had to wait for a real buyer to take their shares. Now they can just come in and borrow and hit the bid. There were a few others, but they really opened up the playing field to allow for wealth, these trading strategies that unfortunately are wealth destructing. And the second thing that we're seeing getting worked into here was the main beneficiary of this period of computerization has been the large cap growth sector. A lot of companies, if the smaller companies, they've gotten decimated and they've been pushed out, and the human beings that traded these things, they don't win against the computers, and they really got pushed out. But the companies that have survived and done well in this era are the large cap tech companies, those that are, heavily weighted within the indexes. The 401k money comes in and buys, the mutual funds, which are close. They mimic indexes. They're really close to index funds. And there's been a large concentration of wealth within a handful of stocks. Many people are familiar with FANG, Facebook, Apple, Netflix, Google. Well, at the top, a few months ago, Facebook, Apple, Google, Amazon represented well over 30% of the NASDAQ 100. You had this big concentration of wealth within these companies. They should have been. These companies did, a bulk of the business in the world. They controlled the information of the world. They craft perception, which leads to policy. They are the center of the new world. So of course they're going to have popularity and conviction and all of those, you know, things that bring investors to love a company. The problem here is Trump is, he's a nationalist, you know, so he, it's not that I think he necessarily believes in not globalizing, but, you know, he's of a different perspective. And you have, like, all battles, you know, for power. Legacy power brokers, when faced with a disruptor, they're not going to go away. They're going to stand and fight. So you have a political battle between the president and 30% of the NASDAQ 100. Who will win? The good guys. You know, who are the good guys? They're the ones who win because nobody ever writes history poorly about themselves. Who will win? I don't know. You know, we really don't know. We know there's a ideological battle going on between the people who have brought globalization to where it is, and the Trump administration, who is fighting for a different version of globalization. You know, so we'll have to see how that plays out. The third thing that we have is with big banks. With the big banks, after Dodd-Frank, they were no longer allowed to run their own money in the markets. Well, that didn't stop them from participating. There was a shift that happened. You know, instead of taking risk capital and putting it into the markets, they then lent to hedge funds who were also customers. And the customers, as hedge funds, would trade through the big banks. The big banks would do the execution while loaning them the money. So the more money that the big banks would lend these funds, the more transactions these guys could do and the more interest the banks made. In here, you had the shift to computerized markets. You had big banks facilitating this. And you now have a couple of political battles happening between the Trump administration and, you know, the legacy power structure. And the legacy power structure is centered around tech and information. And then the banking complex that has been in power for the last 300 years. You just had a way of doing things. So as we're coming into where things need to go, dogs bark, the caravan moves on. You've got a lot of barking in politics, but, you know, the caravan's moving forward. We now have a new way of doing things. You have technology which tracks and illuminates all truths. So when bankers move money from one country to another against the rules, and it sets up a situation of money laundering, that's now illuminated, and it can be tracked and it can be prosecuted. And you're starting to see prosecutions happening in the big bank against, you know, employees of the big banks. You have Goldman Sachs with their Malaysia problems. You had, I believe it was SoftBank with their Venezuela problems. You have insider trading at JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs. You're seeing employees of theirs who have gone rogue, you know, find themselves on the wrong side of the law. But these are people who may have had, more successful defenses in the past when all transgressions weren't illuminated. So the problem we have now is all transgressions are illuminated. This is going to bring this brings some shifts that have to happen as we're coming into, you know, what things will be. You know, what's the cleanup? You now have the need to, you know, respond to everything's fully illuminated. People can't go without prosecution. I think you're starting to see that people are becoming more comfortable with the fact of seeing politicians being prosecuted. You're seeing bankers being prosecuted. The prosecutions are coming. You're also seeing, under the Obama administration, capital formation, the process of capital formation, capital raising, became much more open. And nobody's giving President Obama credit for this, but under the SEC, they created something called the 506C exemption, which means as long as you put together a truthful private placement memorandum and qualify your investors to be high net investors, you can advertise and raise money. It got really simple and really easy, and you're starting to see this. It started, you know, with unscrupulous people at first, but now you're seeing quality deals being advertised. The problem with this is, you know, people who are angel investors or venture capitalists or private equity, they all eventually need an exit. Otherwise, they become conglomerates against their will. They get stuck owning these companies. Well, with the computerization of the markets and the inability for smaller companies to handle, to stay off the onslaught of computer short selling, the public markets are not the place for capital formation they once were. You know, for 401ks and institutional investors, they could own large cap and know that things would be fine. But if you were a small cap company, you're not coming into the public markets and raising money. You can come in, you can get your IPO off, or you can get an uplisting off, but you're not going to get a second and a third round off. The markets are just, the construct does not support younger companies wanting to grow. So on one hand, you've got this new open frontier for capital raising with 506Cs, crowdfunding, Title II, Title III offerings, and these 506C offerings. You have this new frontier, which for social capital is incredible, but you still have to have a way to step these companies up into something. And that something used to be microcap, small cap, publicly traded companies. As part of this cleanup, what you're seeing is there's no love lost between Trump and the big cap tech companies. There's no love lost between Trump and the banks. There's no love lost between Trump and the fund owners, fund managers who have worked ardently against Trump. So what you're starting to see is instead of the more conventional effort of going to the SEC saying, we want to propose a rule change, the SEC going to FINRA says, let's propose a rule change. They draw up the rule, they work it through conversation, test it, put it out for comments, and then enact it. And Trump's using this as cover. You have, you know, the market sell-off that's going to happen when they raise rates and reset rates. And he's using this for cover. You're starting to see awareness for the upcoming tax shift. I don't want to say tax increase, but it's more of a reduction of what can be deducted. When you run a strategy that borrows a lot of money in order to do a lot of transactions, you're using other people's money. There's an interest cost to that. It appears the tax change will disallow the ability to deduct that interest. There will also, it looks like, there will also be a disallowance of the ability to deduct fees for managing these funds, which then makes it difficult for for-profit limited partners who participate in these strategies, who have to pay taxes on their gains. They're not going to be able to lend in, they're not going to be able to place their capital in, they're not going to be able to have the same profit margin as they were before. And in doing so, when you take for-profit investors, force them to not have the same return, you're now creating a pullback effect. You know, they don't know what the full taxes are going to be. The rules are still vague. We aren't going to know what they are until we see the tax form. But if it's November and December when this is being announced and the taxes, you know, the forms are this April, that's a retroactive tax. So we can only assume that whatever's coming into play is going to be retroactive. What this will do is the people who were running machines that preyed upon weak companies, they borrowed money, they borrowed stock, they paid interest to sell shares short of a smaller cap company that didn't have the money to defend their float by buying those shares, they would sell these shares short and knock down the price of the company. And then they would sell more of these shares short and knock down the price of the company. And that goes on in a process until either someone else comes in and buys all of the shares, a value investor says, you know, that's underpriced, I'm going to buy these shares, and chases the short seller out, or the company does a buyback, or the company does a reverse split, or the company delists. So what this does is it makes those strategies much more difficult to run. In theory, and everything has unintended consequences, all magic comes with a price, we're going to see, you know, in theory, we're going to see after this sell-off is done, after this reordering is done, we should see a reduction or removal of strategies that are trying to target companies' shares for price movement because the companies don't really have the money to defend their price or their share price. Whether it works out or not that way, we'll find out. The sell-off goes on. Typically we'll see prices go until sellers are exhausted. Now we're going to see funds unwind. You're seeing forced selling. You're seeing reprisal. The people who are adversaries of Trump, they're not coming in. They're not stepping in to buy. They're not stepping in to help. I don't know if they're necessarily stepping in to participate in shorting the market to drive it lower, but you're not seeing bids. You're seeing liquidations. I think all the way through, we're going to have to listen to him yell at Powell and blame Powell. But the reality is Trump is attempting to take a scalp against the people who have provided natural friction, the people who have already been in power. So the people who run high-frequency trading programs, they're in the target of Trump. The people who have controlled the banking industry and maybe done things that everyday people wouldn't agree with or understand, they're in the targets of Trump. You have the incidental victim here are the large cap tech companies who are, in a political battle with Trump. Their stock prices are getting crushed. So at the end of all of this, you've got Trump who's at the center of the sell-off. The tax shift that's coming through is directed at the people who've been closing off the markets to capital formation. We're never going to hear that. We're going to hear Powell did this, Powell did that. It's all Powell's fault. Sure, Powell's the guy out front. He knew that taking the job. And in the meantime, Trump's getting some good shots in on Bezos and Schmidt, all of the other large cap tech guys. We're going to get a lot of barking dogs as the caravan moves on. So thanks for listening, guys. I'd love to hear your thoughts, comments, and feedback. Feel free to reach out at heytoddpodcast@gmail.com. And until next time, be well.